I'll be giving the next presentation. What I'd like to share with you today is just some history and so forth about our Virginia soybean yield contest. Give you a little background in Virginia. This is the national yield trend. As you see here, this is Virginia. We are lagging behind the nation, of course, like most southern, mid-Atlantic, southeastern states do. But what I'll point out is this huge variation. Now, that's due to our soils, low water holding capacity soils throughout the state. If we get rain, we can do well. Now, with the other side of this, I can attribute, I think, 60 to 75% of this gap on the trends to Virginia growing over half of our acres are double cropped. Of course, those yields are lower. Therefore, if you look at the trend line, I think I know where that's coming from, but I also know where the variation is coming from. Now, here's the thing that's always intrigued me. I'm showing you once again the Virginia yield trend, but I'm also showing you the yield trend for our top winners. This is the number one producer. I have average data as well, and that's somewhat lower than this, but I wanted to show you where we've been over time. Now, if you notice here, we're increasing our soybean yields on a linear basis, 4/10 of a bushel per year, a statewide average. Interesting thing, the top winners, and this is not much different if I look at averages, we're increasing yields by about 8/10 of a bushel. So that's going up a little faster, but this gap has always intrigued me. I know where it's coming from. It's mainly moisture, and as been said earlier, do growers go in with the idea they're going to participate in the yield contest? Some of them do, but in most cases, they just call up their county agent when they pull into a field and see that their yields are good. Honestly, if you put a quadratic response to that, you even see a bigger gap there. So that's where I'd like to start off with. What I'd like to do is just give you a little history and evolution of the contest. I found records back to 1980. I don't know how long we've been conducting the contest, but I think that's about right. I'll show you some trends and practices, and then I'm going to highlight something that I don't want to say stole, but Jim Dunphy at NC State has been performing with his yield contest. And I'll give you a flavor for a maximum efficiency contest and what we do for that. Sometimes you go in and look at some of these records. I found this in the basement of my building back in the corner, kicked off all the rats and roaches and mold and everything like that, and you go back and find these contest entries. In the early 80s, there's very little information. We're trying to collect more information now, but that's generally what we see. Again, there's our yield contest history. I'll give you a little history. The history of this, we started out with a 50 bushel club, the best I can discern from these old records. That's all it was. Did not seem to be a first place or second or third place winner at this time. Just the entry that you made the 50 bushel club. Later on, that moved to a 60 bushel club because yields were getting higher. At this time, the club became kind of an elite club. In other words, once you were in the 60 bushel club, you no longer got a 60 bushel club award. We give everyone that for the first time gets a 60 bushel yield a 60 bushel club plaque. And I put these pictures up here from the standpoint of this is sometimes the only information I had about the yield contest or an article in a paper, which they listed, you know, maybe the top three or top five winners, or when we were in the clubs, it seemed like they would list everyone that was in that club. So I don't have a lot of good information from those early yields years. But then eventually, by the early 90s, it became a 60 bushel club and yield contest. I started seeing evidence of trophies were being awarded for the first, second, third place. And then before I came to Virginia Tech in the late 90s. Before I came, this became yield and efficiency contest, which implies we're monitoring cost of production. However, I don't see where that was happening. I didn't see anything done on cost of production for that. So I changed that back to the yield contest when I started. One thing that when I first started, I heard a lot of people say, hey, you know, over half of my production is double crop behind wheat. The reason I don't enter the contest is that there's no way I can win. Why don't you start a double crop contest? So in the late 90s, we started a double cropping contest, and then we awarded prizes. And by the way, this is the Virginia Soybean Association's contest. In extension, we just helped them do that. The association awards the prizes. The amount has varied, but right now I think it's a $300, $150, and $75 prize for the first, second, and third place entries. So there is a monetary award, but I think the prestige and promotion is the main thing from it. We introduced a maximum efficiency contest in the, about 7 years ago, and then we've seen more irrigation, as Ronnie has shown. If you irrigated your soybeans by the old rule, you were disqualified from the contest. So we actually were getting the irrigated entries. I had the information, but they could not win a trophy because of that. But now we have an irrigated contest. Here's the entry of number of entries. We are a small state. We don't have a lot of entries, and this is what I found. There's some areas in which we had one first, second, third place winners, but I couldn't discern how many entries we had. But you can see the variation here. We don't start harvesting our beans until October. Once it gets into November, we'll be lucky if we get 10 entries this year because we have had an awful harvest season. It's rained so much that people are getting behind in the harvest. So we don't have a lot of entries. There have been some areas. We thought by introducing the double crop contest that was a driver for this, and about half of our entries that year were double crop, but I'll show you later that's not necessarily the case. So we keep introducing, trying new things to get more entries, but that has not always been successful. I'll give you some trends, and I'm not going to show you any graphs or anything like that, but I'll just give you some trends that I've looked at over the information that we've collected. Of course, our maximum yield, I've already talked about that, has increased by this. On average, we've increased by 6/10 of a bushel. If you remember from the previous slide, our average yield on the state average is only 3 to 4/10. Varieties is interesting. Early on, there are very few due to primarily public varieties to many with Roundup Ready varieties, and now we're back to very few entries, but most of this is that Pioneer Seed promotes this more than any other company. Therefore, most of the entries, they encourage people that are growing their varieties to enter the contest. 3/4 of our entries are probably Pioneer varieties. And there are certain areas of the state that really get into this, and they want their growers recognized. Equipment, I'll talk a little more about that. Early 90s, we were primarily planters, somewhat narrow row planters, but wide rows as well as narrow. Late 90s to early 2000, we moved to drills. These were primarily box drills. Early 2000s, they went to the split row planters, 15-inch primarily, and this is on average. And I do see these contest entries being a couple of years above what the rest of the state, before the rest of the state jumps on that bandwagon. But then lately we've seen a large move to air drills. I think that's solely because of the convenience. It loads quicker and the farms are bigger and so forth. So right now it's usually an air drill or a split row planter. I see very few box drills anymore. Chemicals, I'll just let you read over this, but basically herbicide-wise, Roundup Ready had a major effect. I will point out that, in general, in these 6 years here, there was nothing but Roundup spray on most of these entries. And then with weed resistance, we were back to where we started from. Insecticides, this was an as-needed basis up until the last few years. Now with more people, higher prices, more people interested in the contest, we're seeing more insecticide use, but it's really a region or farm dependent on this. Seed treatments, we started seeing more fungicides, and now almost all the contest entries seem to have both insecticide and fungicide. Our foliar fungicides, we've seen a large increase in that, but reflecting resistance with our strobilurin to frog eye leaf spot primarily, and I think Cercospora blight is another one that's our control with that's declining just with our strobilurins. We're seeing the combination products. Here's our full season versus double crop. The full season is in green. We have more entries of that. I think it's solely because it's hard. It's time, you know, it's November into December. People are not going to take the time to get those double crop entries out there, and that's most of their crop. They have to get that out. Conventional till and no-till, that is one trend we've seen. Most of our entries today are no-till. Seeding rates, no change. This has been fairly flat with double crop and no-till. I'm going to move on through this because I want to spend the last couple of minutes talking about this most efficient yield contest. We started collecting a lot more data from these forms, and this objective of this was to compare the cost of production to grow a bushel of soybean instead of yield, thinking that would normalize some of this with high inputs, and that people are using high inputs, we can normalize that out. And no one sees the details of this except me. I enter the data, so I don't share this with anyone. It's the exact practices that an individual grower is using. We have a form that asks for a lot of information. I even checked your soil mapping unit because I will adjust yields based on that. If you're in a better class one soil, I charge a higher land rent for that. And again, I ask for a lot of information. That all goes into a spreadsheet. We use our typical budgets for this. I put all of this information in. I standardized the equipment. And I worked with the association on this. They said, I want to standardize your equipment. And quite honestly, when you get into fixed cost, our budgets assume most efficient use of the equipment. So whether you're farming 200 acres or 1,000, that fixed cost is very similar. I will point a few things out from these budgets. Where you save on double crop is lime, of course. I allocate that lime cost to our wheat and soybean crop. Therefore, to that half of that, I do charge a land rent. I use state averages for a class three soil, and then I prorate that. I charge more land for more productive soil and less for a less productive. So I'm running out of time. I'm going to move on through this, but this is what we're trying to get at here is the cost of production per acre. I do charge a fixed irrigation cost. Therefore, most of our irrigated entries are not going to win the most efficient contest just because of that extra cost. And quite honestly, we're going to have somewhere that got all the rain they needed to use that. I do share this information about all the production practices with those growers. But as you notice, I've sorted this by, you know, lowest to highest in all these categories. Therefore, nobody knows exactly what they are. The individual farmer can go in and say, oh, here's my insecticide cost, there's my repair, but there's no way to track this back to that grower. So I'm going to yield in that with this. What influences it most? I've done some analysis. Yield, of course, is the main thing for winning this most efficient contest. Cropping system is secondary, and tillage, seeding rate, and herbicide, fungicide all come into play. So I'm going to end there.